Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. How are you, James? Good to see you, Mr. James Fox. Sorry, I botched that intro.
Oh, you're good. What's up, man? How's it going?
It's going well.
Lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, so much stuff. So I guess we should start off with the madness that has kind of grabbed hold of White Sox Twitter, of Justin Ishbia, or is it Matt Ishbia? It's Justin Ishbia,
Justin,
right?
Yeah, Matt's the brother, the son's guy. And Matt, it's Matt with one T.
One T.
Yes.
One T and billions of dollars.
That's true, yes.
So there has been an agreement made to pass ownership over to Justin Ishbia. But there are some qualifications for that. Do you want to go ahead and run through that?
Yeah, sure. I'd almost like to. So we're going to have Jeff Ellis on at some point to talk draft, the Guardian, our Guardians friend. So like Cleveland did something similar. So I'm actually like going to reach out to him to see if Cleveland fans like are like, hey, this is what is it, David Glazer like paid for while Dolan, like it's like David Glazer and the Dolan, like it was the same type of thing where it's like, oh yeah, you can have the team in 5 years sorts of thing. So I mean, look, I think we kind of talked about this a lot when the original reporting came out. I think Dan Hayes and John Greenberg nailed this pretty much, right? Like I think we don't know exactly what Justin Ishbia is going to be doing. Like he's going to be putting money into the team for the next 2 years, which my guess is and has always been he's going to help him build a stadium. We can get into that too, like where that stadium is going to be. Like, I don't think, you know, they're just going to go out and sign Pete Alonso and be like Justin Ishbia paid for it, right? But paying down debt, that sort of thing. I heard David Sampson on this week kind of explaining what that seems like. But yeah, I mean, so 2029, I mean, you know, I get like a lot of people like aren't super excited because of how far it is. But like, I think it's light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I think it's awesome. I think Justin Ishbia will be the next owner of the White Sox. We just got to wait a little bit. And if I were him, I wouldn't want to take over till after 27 either, like after these labor talks are done. And I know Jerry isn't like the hawk that he used to be. Like, I don't think he's one of the labor talk leaders anymore as a 90-year-old man. But I think I would still let him handle that. So I think like the thing that's the most interesting, I think, is just what it mean, like what is Justin Ishbia doing like now, right? He's not like sitting next to Jerry Reinsdorf, you know, at owners meetings and stuff like that. Like he's a limited partner, but he's the next owner. So the part that fascinates me is like what he's paying for and how much like soon.
My one thing that gives me pause about this whole thing is the caveat that if it doesn't happen, that he can force the sale in 2034.
My God, that's so long. That's like, yeah.
Like, you're looking at 9 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, to me, 2029 makes sense because that's when his cushy stadium deal's done. Like, the lease on the stadium is done at that point. Like, that's like a clean break to me, I think. I think Jerry would like to hope that Chris Getz in his front office could get back competitive in an AL Central and you could get decent to good, build a new stadium, and then ride off into the sunsets. I mean, look, Jerry might be dead 5 years from now. I don't know. Like, we're not going to get into that, but like, we don't know. He's 90. Like, and so David Sampson did say that this week too. Basically, like at that point, that would trigger like a sale too, whereas like that wasn't clear. They said that he wouldn't get the team until 2029.
Yeah. So,
but I think if something happens,
this question,
something happens in 2027, like it sounds like the kids at that point would just sell it to Ishbia.
Okay. So that answers this question that baseball asked. What if Jerry dies before 2029?
Right,
the kids take over? That's not a thing, apparently.
They don't want it. No, because like they don't want it. So I think, you know, yeah, 2029 is, I think that's probably when the majority of this happens. But I mean, in theory, like if we get stadium news somewhat soon, like they might have a stadium by then. Like it's not a football stadium. Like it's a, you know, like it, and the 78 thing is fascinating too, because you know, it looked like Joe Mansueto or whatever beat them to the punch, but now it seems like they might build two stadiums there, which seems a little bit nuts because I don't know where people are going to park. But I don't know where else it would be then. I think staying where they are is a total fallacy. Like, that's not, I wouldn't care. Like, it's an easy ride for me. I don't really care where the stadium is. That would be cool, but it just seems like that isn't really an option. Like, they'll be elsewhere, like in the city, I would imagine.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard, which if you're living under a rock, the Chicago Fire announced earlier this week that they had figured out some way that they're going to self-fund a stadium at the 78 location, which has been the rumored location of the new White Sox stadium. It has been pointed out by numerous people that you could absolutely fit two in the same lot, and I don't know if they would share surface lots, because you know, I've seen people on Twitter say, oh well, we don't care about parking. Well, guess what, most of the fan base does care about surface lot parking. They need to have a place to put their car.
Yeah, and I wonder if you could just, like, how high, like, you could just put in parking garages, you know, so it's not taking up as much space as, you know, they do at White Sox games. But yeah, the Fire's going to be on, like, the north side of the plot, where that's, like, not close to, I mean, it's close, obviously, but it's not on the same side where they thought that the White Sox stadium would go. I don't know. The other thing that's kind of, like, annoying to me, and look, you know, I don't, like, want to defend Jerry Reinsdorf. It, like, pains me. But when you have media people, like, commending Joe Mansueto, and, like, look, I get it, right? Like, that it's awesome, but he's, like, paying for his own stadium. But if the Bears and White Sox stadiums cost $650 million, they'd pay for them themselves, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would. I mean, they would. You know, it's, you're talking, like, $2 billion, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever it's going to be, $1 billion.
Yeah, apples to oranges.
It's like, not even close to the same thing.
Yeah, the soccer stadiums, if you have ever driven by one or been to one, you know that the difference between that and a baseball or football stadium is night and day different.
Well, it's half. It's like 22,000 seats.
Yeah, well, there is that, and it's also, if you just look at the way it's constructed, it's not constructed like a baseball or a football stadium. It's, you know, surface areas around with concessions most of the time. It's not, you know, concourses built in and all that stuff. So
that seems like smart here, though. Like, the Fire could probably sell out 20K, right? Like, I mean, I don't care. Maybe. I don't care about soccer, but a lot of people do. So
yeah,
and you would think that they would be big spenders. Like, if they're buying a stadium, like, you would think, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. And, you know, they do have, you know, clubs from all around the world come and play at that stadium. But I don't know exactly. Like, I don't know how many people they draw. I mean, I saw today that there was tickets available for the non-Caitlin Clark WNBA game available for, like, $3.
Well, yeah, so, because she wasn't playing at the United Center. Yeah. Yeah, that sounded like a great idea until she's not playing. Then it's like a huge problem.
Yeah, absolutely. You have any other thoughts on this thing?
I think the only thing is, like, I would say that, like, if you're a White Sox fan and you're excited, like, you should be excited. Like, don't let anybody rain on your parade. Like, I think I said that the other day. Like, it is funny, the pushback that we got, and not us, but just in general. Your Bob Nightingales of the world and other people are like, oh, Jerry's not selling, that report's whatever. And it was totally accurate. Nobody said it was happening right now. Right. It's just like, so yeah. So, I mean, John Greenberg nailed it. He didn't buy the Twins and he's going to get the White Sox instead. I think that's pretty good. And we have plenty of time to get into what he would be like as an owner and the failure of the Phoenix Suns and the differences in the leagues and why I don't think that really matters. But, you know, tonight's not that night.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people complain about, like, the way that the Suns have been run, but I don't really, I mean, for the
salary cap league.
Yeah, completely different. Again, apples and oranges. You know, I can't really say that it's you know, the same thing at all. So
yeah, he spent a ton of money on payroll, and he made concession items like $2, two pretty cool things.
Yeah, no, for sure. So keeping with the actual major league team, the White Sox actually look like they're playing baseball.
Yeah.
Now, there's still some of the same problems that we've had for a while, being with, you know, the bullpen giving up runs here and there. But for the most part, like, they've looked like a competent baseball team. I mean, today was a little rough where they had, you know, a bad inning here and there, you know. But for the most part, like, they've looked like a pretty competitive baseball team and actually pretty fun to watch.
4-3 homestand against, like, two teams that one contender and one team that thought they were a contender, right? I mean, that's, yeah, they're playing okay. I mean, I do still think, you know, the Sox finish with, you know, I mean, if you look at the standings right now, it's basically them in Oakland at the, or them in the A's at the bottom of the American League. So they're still going to lose, like, a lot, but the games are fun to watch, and there's, you know, there's young players who matter or will matter on the team. But yeah, I mean, the bullpen is what it is. I know we're going to listen to a chunk of Brian Bannister on Grant Taylor, but there's a whole nother part in there where he kind of talks about how bad the bullpen is, and they know it. And, you know, it's just one of those spots. You're going to trade some guys from there. You're going to see more kids. It's just, it's the last thing that they're going to fix, because it's like the last thing that matters, honestly.
Yeah, I didn't take the full interview because I didn't want to sit there and look at the screen for 5 minutes. But
yeah, that's fine.
But yeah, the Grant Taylor stuff will be in there for sure.
Bannister, it's funny, like, when the Whites, when you have, like, so Spiegel and Holmes, and obviously Lawrence Holmes is, like, a Sox fan, I think. Again, I don't know, but he was for a long time, whatever. When it's just, like, guys like Brian Bannister and Ryan Fuller on, and it's like, oh my God, these are, like, the smartest people the White Sox have ever hired. And who knows, right? But they just, like, come off that way. It's, like, not old White Sox-y. Like, they're, like, talking about all these modern things. You're like, oh, this is different.
It is nice to hear them talking about actually developing guys and the way that they're working on it. And, like, actually talking about, like, statistical numbers and analysis that actually matters, even just in the interview. So that's pretty awesome.
What is it? Baseball Toss. He's asked me twice now about Forrest Whitley. So I quote tweeted, like, that he was DFA'd and put future White Sox. Like, I was just being an idiot. But like, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the Sox are number one on the waiver priority. So I don't know what Brian Bannister thinks of him. Forrest Whitley is 27 now. He was a first round pick years ago out of high school, and he's been pretty bad, but he's still got pretty good stuff. If they like him, I think they'll claim him because they make roster moves like every other day. I just don't know what they feel about him. I don't if he gets extension on his, you know, pitches, then they'll probably pick him up. I don't have any of that data in front of me.
Well, so the White Sox picked up what was his name? Not
Tyler
Patrick, so.
Alexander.
No.
They got
no.
him today. Before that, Ryan Cusick.
Cusick, yes. And now he has been claimed by the Phillies, and he's in on his fourth team in a week.
Yeah, he's on DFA limbo, DFA roulette, whatever. That's another former first rounder.
Yep. Speaking of first rounders, did you happen to see that the other night the Cubs started 9 first round picks in the same game?
I did not, but that's interesting. I mean,
I think it's the first time it's ever happened.
I mean, thinking about it though, I mean, their outfield is all first rounders. Shaw is, Horner is, so that's 5 everyday players, and so is Swanson. Michael Bush, I think, is. Yeah. So they're starters. Plus what? Who did they start? Reese McGuire, probably?
I don't even know.
It must have been Reese McGuire as the 8th. And then they DH'd somebody that was a first rounder too. Maybe Turner. I don't know. I don't. I'd have to, like, go look at it. But yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's the first time that it had ever happened is,
well, because a lot of times, like, you're, like, most teams are starting an international guy, right, or something.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know,
right.
Like, it's just like.
But I mean, we're talking, you know, I'm not going to go and say 140 years of history here, but I mean, like, at least like 60 years, you figured it would have happened at least once. It's pretty crazy. So I had a question in here from Vince about will Ishbia pay for the stadium alone? Do you think that's,
I don't know. I mean, I think Jerry was like talking about putting up $200 million, and then, you know, like, the Illinois legislature laughed at him. So Like, it's just a matter of, like, my guess is they're not going to get any state funding for this stadium. So they'll have to come up with the money for, like, whatever the stadium costs, and then they'll get money. Like, if them and the fire are building at the 78 and they're putting all these condos in and bars and stuff, like, this, the state and the city will chip in for metro stuff and roads and infrastructure and all that sort of thing, but they're going to be on the hook for the stadium.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same. So Uncle Ted suggests that the Rockies are going to steal Walker McKinven to be their next manager next year. And I'm just going to say this. When have the Colorado Rockies done something that you said, oh, that's smart?
Yeah. I mean,
not very often. So this would be a pretty much a first, I think, in the last 20 years or so. So I'm not going to buy that. So actually there's another thing brought up here in chat about Corey Lee. Corey Lee got sent to AAA and he hasn't played yet. And somebody asked me on Twitter if, you know, I knew what was going on with Corey Lee and why he hasn't started. I have no idea, but, that does bring up an interesting question. What are they going to keep Corey Lee in Charlotte, or do you think that they're going to deal him for, something?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably gets traded ultimately, but like, I don't think he's just gonna get traded for whatever now. I think they'd like him to go down and play well. I know there are people that do not like throwing to him, and I think he's good. I mean, he's fine offensively. I think we've said it as an offensive minded backup, like Corey Lee's a big leaguer, but he's just not this front office's priority, obviously, because they have Kyle Teal and Carroll. So I mean, does it hurt his trade value making him play in Charlotte? Maybe, but like, lots of teams don't have catching. So like, it kind of is what it is, I feel like.
Yeah. So tying that in, Kyle Teal was called up this week. I was quoted on CHGO talking about how he wasn't going to be called up probably until late in the year.
Yeah, I was way wrong. And some of it was informed. Like, I talked to guys like Jim Callis and Scott Merkin. They thought, like, you know, September. So like, I'll own that. That's fine. They didn't do what I thought they were going to do. Like, whatever.
Yeah. I immediately responded to the video and said, hey, sometimes you're right, sometimes you are wrong. And this is definitely the latter there.
Well, cause the thing is with that, they wanted him down because they didn't they thought he needed more work defensively. So if you need more work defensively, you shouldn't be able to force the issue because of your offense, but you know, whatever.
You know, he's, 3-for-8 hitting .375 with an .875 OPS in the majors. I mean, granted, very, very small sample size. I think it's
played three. Yeah.
Yeah. He only had two at bats. That's what it was. Yeah. He only had two at bats in two of those games. So, but I mean, He's looked absolutely incredible in Charlotte over the last month. So I guess that makes sense that why he did get called up. But I mean, I was very surprised. I'll just say that. So,
I wasn't like upset about it. Like, I think people were coming at me like, "Huh, you were wrong, loser." I'm like, okay, well, I still get to watch Kyle Teal play. Like, it's fine. Like,
people just want to be salty. That's all that boils down to.
You were wrong. I'm like, I'm always wrong. Like, what?
Yeah,
like,
who cares? All right. So, do you have anything with the major league team that you want to bring up here, right quick, before I move to this Bannister audio?
Well, I just think it's interesting, like, you know, that they have guys that are worth following. I mean, look, I've liked Chase Mydroth as like a third piece. And it's early, but like, he's pretty good. Like, I didn't expect him to be like this good. I just kind of thought, like, I was a little bit skeptical of the profile just because I didn't know that he would impact the baseball enough, but it like hasn't seemed to matter because he's just on base all the time. So, you know, if that's your 9 hitting regular on a good team, or even if he's up at the top sometimes, looks like a pretty good third piece in a deal, obviously. And then one thing about Mike Tauchman, I know we talked a lot about him last week. I'm curious to see just what they do with him, because like rental bats don't really go for very much. And they, look, they should trade him if they can get something, right? But if they can't, like, I think the arbitration thing is interesting. Like, you could just keep him, and he could be on your team next year when you're theoretically hoping to be a little bit better, and he seems like he's helping some of the other guys, and he's a solid left-handed bat. So it's a little bit unorthodox that he has, like, another arb year remaining. So they could technically keep him if they wanted to.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad if he stuck around. He at least puts together professional at-bats, and, you know, as long as he can stay healthy, he's worth having around. I mean, you don't really expect to win, but, no. You know, it's always good to have professional players in the dugout.
You would think a contender would want him, though. Like, he's pretty helpful. Like, he's, like, a very useful guy.
Yeah, he gets on base, you know, and when you're going in, you know, going down the stretch and trying to get into the playoffs, it makes sense to have a guy that you can bring off the bench that can provide you with decent at bats and can occasionally mash.
Yeah, and then some of the pitching, like obviously, like they're just churning all year. Tyler Alexander is here to pitch out of the bullpen, and Owen White is in the majors because they got some pitching injuries. But I mean, you know, some of these guys, man, they just keep chugging along. Like Shane Smith has been a revelation. And then obviously like a guy like Mike Vassell, like not super sexy stats, but just that dude's solid. I mean, that's like a really good pickup. And, you know, obviously we keep talking about Bannister and how we're going to like hear him in a minute. But I mean, like if you can get a Eric Fetty or a Shane Smith every year, like, yeah, that's not too bad. Obviously, it's like, you know, only 2 years so far. But if this is, you know, the power of like kind of what their pitching department can do, like, hey, we can get a scrap heap guy to be like a fringe all-star. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And I find it very interesting. You know, like the one thing I wonder about with Shane Smith is he picked up his changeup before in the offseason before he was picked by the White Sox. But it does seem like they're having a fairly successful run here in the last couple of years of finding guys that can be somewhat useful. And, you know, I mean, even
it's happening, you know, in the minors too right now.
Yeah. I mean, even Clevinger yesterday threw five innings and he was back up to hitting 97 miles an hour with his fastball. I mean, I know people don't like him, you know, because of his off the field stuff. And I understand that people would rather see young guys pitching. But, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you still need like a dozen pitchers at minimum to finish through a year. So you're going to have spot starts here and there that guys are just going to have to make.
Yeah. I mean, even in the minors, like Jake Palish right now was kind of like an undrafted afterthought type. And now it's like, oh, pretty good. Like Umberger was undrafted and like out of nowhere pitching in what? He was like in the... Was he in like the Frontier League?
No, he was in the draft league. I think he was like on the Woodcutters or something.
Yeah,
like
Yeah. It's, and look, I mean, he's at low A, right? But
yeah,
it's still like that gets you through a minor league season. Like you get guys like this.
Yeah, and if it gives your, you know, all your guys in the minor leagues, if it gives them a chance to be on a winning ball club, I think that helps develop them as they're coming up through the minors, saying, hey, this is what it feels like to be in the playoff hunt all the time. And that's, you know, ultimately, I think what you want when you're trying to develop these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's been interesting. I mean, there's a ton of pitching injuries and, you know, they're kind of making do with what they have. And then like all the pitchers are going to come back next year and then we'll see, you know, we'll kind of see like how it all shakes out. But I mean, you look at the starters for today. Like if we would have said like, oh yeah, this was a Sunday in July or a Sunday in June 2 months ago, you know, and these were the starters, we would have been like, what the heck happened? Like,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that like next year is going to be super interesting because you're going to have a bunch of these guys coming back that like, that's gonna be a crowded pitching room. We're going to have to see how this whole thing shakes out, but it's definitely going to, it's not going to lack drama. That's for sure.
Well, that's why I think they're gonna draft a lot of bats.
I mean, we said that last year too.
Well, they did though. They took one pitcher and a bunch of bats. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they still drafted a bunch of relievers and everything. Relievers. So, I mean, yeah, relievers. You know, there is that. But, all right. Well, let's see. Doug brings up Drew Baker being more interesting than I thought he would be. You know, I mean, he's got some hits. I mean, it's the first week, so it's small sample size. I mean, he is an OBP guy. He works through his, you know, he works his at bats really well. And surprisingly, the first or second base he stole all year was with the Knights the other night. And I think he had another one today. So they're like actually like putting a focus on trying to steal bases there in Charlotte. And if you haven't noticed by looking at our X account at Future Sox, there have been a lot of home runs in Charlotte. So that's actually been a fantastic development because we're used to seeing guys that you think are going to hit home runs that go to Charlotte and they don't hit home runs. So I like seeing guys that do hit home runs.
Yes. And Brooks Baldwin going on tears.
Kevin asks, who on this show said the Sox shouldn't draft Jack Keggs?
I think both of us.
Your answer is both of us.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's fine. You know, we were worried about his chase rate, which, you know, from the SEC to Major League Baseball should have made a pretty big difference. But turns out he's pretty stinking good. It happens. I mean,
yeah,
this is
we'll see how good he is. Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot of,
I mean, this, that's how Andrew Vaughn ends up getting drafted super early in the draft. And we happened to draft Andrew Vaughn. Well, guess what? He didn't turn out to be right about it. He didn't, we, you know, everybody didn't, you know, end up being right about how ready he was to hit. So,
yeah. Hooray. Yeah, I think Keggs might be awesome, but I just, they were not in the position to take a first baseman. I mean, even if they didn't take Hagen Smith, I would have taken Connor Griffin. So.
Yeah, I think that would have been more likely.
Keep taking up the middle players that your owner will never pay for.
Yep. So James asks, is Shane Murphy in the conversation for next year? I don't know. I mean, it's possible. He's shown that he can pitch literally everywhere in the minor leagues, so I don't see why he wouldn't at least get a shot to be a long relief guy, if anything. I mean, I don't think it hurts to have too many arms. So... I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, he's in the mix. They got a whole big pile of dudes.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and bring up this this Grant Taylor thing so we can move along that conversation because we're about halfway through the show, so we might as well do that now and allow ourselves some time to talk about that afterwards. So here we go. This is Brian Bannister hopped on 670 The Score this week and talked with Lawrence Holmes and Matt Spiegel, and this is one of their things that they're talking specifically about Grant Taylor because somebody texted asking a question about Grant Taylor, and that ended up getting asked. So here is an answer because a lot of people on here that are in the chat would like to know, and I thought that there were some intriguing answers to it. So here we go.
You know, there's a lot of thought that goes into these decisions. I've seen the obvious reactions from the fan base, social media, the media, and they're all valid. You know, the interesting thing about Grant is when you look at how he pitches and his characteristics, he's very similar to a Tyler Glasnow. He's very similar to a Clase, to a Kenley Jansen, to I don't compare people to Mariano, but he has that kind of flexibility. Mariano is in his own category. But, you know, when you look at the guys in this category, how they're most effective, the types of injuries they tend to have, how they're used the best, you know, Grant releases the ball about 7.5 feet in front of the rubber. So he's out there releasing it where Kenley, Glasnow, all those guys release it. And you've seen the guys that have pitched in a starting role with those types of features. And they tend to be very injury prone. And we've already gone through that with Grant a little. So in the short term, we're looking out for his health, for how we can get him to the big leagues and contributing in the best way possible, but not pigeonholing him in a relief role, but also acknowledging that when you compare his pitch metrics, what he can do as a pitcher, It compares with some of the best closers in the world. So, you know, short term, he definitely has that kind of upside. And then people, you know, want to compare him to Skeens, et cetera, that have those types of velocities. We are totally open to him continuing to pitch in a starting role. But between managing his workload, dealing with his past injury history, and giving him maximum upside and maximum ability to contribute for to the Chicago White Sox and have an outstanding major league career, we made that decision in the short term. And he's electric. You know, I've seen him up close a couple times. It's one of the best arms I've ever seen, and I don't say that lightly because I've been around a lot of good arms. So it's somebody the fans are going to enjoy watching, and we're just trying to do what's best for him.
So that's interesting. Do you have any thoughts right off the bat?
Yeah, I mean, at least it's a plan. Like, it really doesn't seem like, hey, we saw this guy throw. We think he's really, like, my fear was that they were, like, jumping the gun on him starting. And I think what's more likely and what it seems like is, look, they know how long it's going to take for him to be like a 150 inning a year starting pitcher at this point. And they think his arm is too good to do that. So they're going to expedite him in this relief role. He pitched back to backs this week, right? Where he closed two games in a row. So I think we see him. Okay.
I mean, he closed one and then threw two thirds of an inning the next day.
Okay. But he pitched back to back days, which I don't know that he's ever done. So it seems like, yeah, I mean, he's going to be probably in the big leagues fairly soon, July-ish. And then he'll be in the big league bullpen next year. And then I think as you're moving along here, they didn't really rule out him starting. I mean, Chris Getz said the same thing Friday. The media kind of asked, and he was very much like, oh no, nobody's ruling out him, not starting again. It was just kind of, and we don't know what his innings limit is, right? Like if it's 60, then yeah, like this makes a lot of sense. I just kind of thought it would be more innings than that. So, I mean, look, like when he's coming out of the big league bullpen to like pitch the eighth inning, like everybody's going to be excited because he's awesome. I just didn't want them to like tank his value. And it seems like, Bannister's probably read our tweets and some others. I think he acknowledged it. He's like, yeah, I mean, obviously we'd rather have him throw 180 innings a year. I'm not sure they think that's feasible for a while.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, I think the part that I really thought was fantastic was he basically laid it out there about guys with extreme extension on their pitches and the fact that they do happen to be, generally more injury prone. Now, granted, he's already had his TJ and, but you've seen along the lines of like a Tyler Glasnow where he's got like the same thing where it doesn't matter, he's TJ, whether it be, oblique, whether it be a lat. I mean, it's just thing after thing after thing. So if that is indeed the reasoning behind this whole thing, at least I kind of understand that, and I think that I speak for most people that thought it was an awful idea right out of the gate. We just wanted an explanation as to why you would take a guy with such an explosive arm and immediately move him to relief when he seemed to be doing just fine.
Yeah, and I think they just, they want him in the big leagues soon. And there is something to be said for, like, not wasting your bullets in the minor leagues. And look, you could say the same thing about Noah Schultz, right? Like, I'll put him in the big league bullpen too. Well, he needs to throw 120 innings, right? Like, Taylor doesn't, because it seems like they're more willing to do the Garrett Crochet thing with him, where, maybe he is like a high leverage reliever for a couple of years. And then 2027 comes along and you have a rotation spot and you're like, we're going to move Grant Taylor to the rotation, and it's just one of those types of things. So I'm glad the kid's on board. It sounds like the agent's on board. So like, as long as he's fine with it, I mean, what do I care? I like maximizing the value of these guys.
Yeah. And I guess, it all depends, when you've got value in other areas with guys that that could possibly be a more durable arm, then you reassess how you're assessing the value, I guess.
Right. And they're also like, they're trying to build a baseball team that's like going to win, right? So, I think it's easy to pencil in those two lefties at the top, even though, pen. I didn't say pen. I said pencil. So I think the hope is that those two guys are in your rotation and Shane Smith is in your rotation. And then, you know, you have a whole group of Jonathan Cannon and Sean Burke and Drew Thorpe and Mason Adams and all these other guys that can fill out a rotation to then, you know, then you can start deciding which of these starter converts, you know, are going to pitch at the back of your bullpen. So it's Grant Taylor and Peyton Paulette. And, you know, do you do Jairo Iriarte back there and maximize his stuff? And obviously, you know, Wickelman Gonzalez is already there. So yeah, I think they're going to start getting some of these guys in the bullpen. If they're doing this with Grant Taylor, they're not doing it so he can spend the year closing in the Birmingham bullpen, though. He's going to be in Chicago.
Yeah, that would be kind of one of those things where everybody would kind of just be like, oh, why are we wasting him? If, you know, there's no reason for him to dominate in the Barons bullpen. And
right,
as we've heard about the baseballs in Charlotte and seeing some
of
the performances.
Yeah, don't even bother. Yeah.
I don't really want anybody pitching in Charlotte at this point. And I certainly don't want the top prospects going there after hearing about dusty baseballs and, you know, and just the, you know, the way that the ball flies out of that park. It just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, you can send your, you know, top three prospects there that are pitchers. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So,
well, I mean, don't you think Paulette has kind of done enough too, though? Like, I kind of feel like both those guys should be in the big league bullpen, like within the next month.
Yeah.
And I know you're adding them to the 40 man and you're trying to get through a season. Like, I get all that, right? But like, there's guys you don't need to see ever again that you have on your team. Like, they rhyme with Bryce Wilson. So,
yeah, I don't know. Like, you saw, you know, I texted you like right away when I saw Peyton Paulette pitch today in Charlotte after watching him pitch last week out of town and looking fantastic. And then he pitches in Charlotte and can't keep the ball anywhere near the zone. He allowed a single, walked two guys, then hit two guys in a row, and then he was out of the game.
Well, but you brought it up on air at the end last week, right? Like, and you didn't get too specific, but, you know, there are some rumblings out of Charlotte that some of the pitchers don't like the baseballs. And it's not because they're going from the AA ball to the major league ball. It's because something's happening in Charlotte where the balls don't feel right. They're dusty or whatever, and guys can't grip the baseball. And
yeah,
look, I think like with all the hit by pitches and the walks and the wild pitches and stuff, like there, you know, there might be something to that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you see them pitch at Birmingham and they're, you know, having shut down innings where they're not walking guys. And then you see them go to Charlotte and then there's like these things here. And Uncle Ted says, sounds like excuses to me. Okay, fine. You can think that if you want. But there is something to be said that they are apparently. And so Jeff, AAA Jeff, our guy in the Carolinas down there, he talked to the head umpiring chief for minor league baseball, who he is friends with and is friendly with. They hang out at Charlotte every once in a while. And he said that essentially that they do rub up the baseballs earlier than, say, the major leagues and probably in a bunch of other places, just because I think if I remember correctly, he said something about staffing. So if that's the issue, that they're not rubbing up these baseballs an hour before game time, like they're, like everywhere else does, that they do it like 3 hours and they do it in huge batches, that's probably a problem, because if they can't hold on to the baseball, it makes it difficult.
Speaking of our guy, Jeff, do you think he went down and nudged his way in between Tony La Russa and Dave Dombrowski last week?
Probably just a little
scoot over.
AAA Jeff sandwich.
Scoot,
you know?
Over, fellas. He gets right in between them. He's like, so are we talking trade? What are we doing here? And obviously, yeah, the Iron Pigs were in town, so that's why Dombrowski was here. It was, you know, nothing crazy. He was watching his AAA club. But, you know, I was like, ooh, Dave Dombrowski's at the Charlotte game. And then you're like, oh, darn it, they're playing the Iron Pigs. So,
yeah. And, like, also, I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, one of the guys that I had talked about that I was, like, kind of looking at the Arizona Fall League, Otto Kemp, who started the series.
And now he's up, yeah.
Started the series with the Iron Pigs, and then after Dombrowski was there for a couple of days, then Otto Kemp was no longer there. So I think he saw what he liked to see, and that's how he ended up getting bumped.
They've been really, like, waiver wire active, too, the Phillies. I mean, that's a team. So they've been rumored on Luis Robert, obviously. That's a team that Mike Talkman could help. Like, he would be great on the Phillies.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And now they need somebody because Bryce Harper is to the IL with a wrist injury. So
Andre Vaughn, yes.
Andre Vaughn, who did hit a home run, his second home run of the week with the Knights. He's still batting like 270 or something.
Yeah, I saw like Friday Chris Getz talked about it, and he's like, oh, you know, we're sure like he's doing his work and he'll be back soon. I'm like, I don't believe you. But, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Carrie says that she can go rub the baseballs up for him if they're lacking in personnel. I don't know. Maybe make a phone call. See if they're hiring for nothing.
Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah, that's something right there.
That would have been the job for Justin Jerschley. Oh, sorry, that was mean.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I don't know. Without Andre Vaughn in the major leagues, you haven't seen as many guys thrown out at home. So that's good.
Yeah.
Seems like maybe that's just a bad combination between Jerschley and Andre, you know?
Yeah, it does seem like it. And I just think the lineup is, I mean, even today, right, they're getting murdered and they come back in the ninth. Like, you're, like, showing some fight. Pretty good. Like, I was, you know, Tim Elko struck out to end it, which stunk. You know, I think Austin Slater freaking, I mean, that ball was murdered. And, you know, they have, like, one of the best players in baseball on their team who just, like, takes it away.
Is that Rates and Barrels, Uncle Ted? Is that the one?
Well, that's his podcast, so maybe I could look for that's interesting. Eno would know.
Yeah. Eno Saris, Uncle Ted just popped in a comment, said Eno Saris just had a podcast about the minor league balls being new ones that are made in China and people are hating them. So that's
So the AAA balls are supposed to be the major league ball.
Supposed to be. Yeah. So yeah. The other ones though, AA and below, those ones are the
But remember that? When I don't think you and I were doing the show together yet, were we, when Mano was in AA struggling with like the spider tech ball or like the tacky ball, like it was awful. Like those were terrible. Like it's just, you know, like you're trying to throw splitters and the ball's like going into the crowd, you know, like it's just awful.
Yeah, that was the year before I hopped on here, and trust me, I was raging about it on the other podcast for sure.
Yeah, no, it's just the whole thing was so weird. They had like different rules in each league and different balls, and you know, some didn't even wear uniforms. No, I don't know. It was just very
the Atlantic
strange.
League stealing first base.
Yeah, yeah,
on pass balls. That's just insanity. And, you know, like, I understand that you're trying to find, like, the next thing and whatever. But, all the guys, like, every guy I talked to absolutely hated the spider tech. They said, the hitters don't know where it's going. We don't know where it's going either. So it's just kind of when we throw it, just look out and we'll see what happens. And, you know, like, the odd thing was, though, is that you would have thought that it would have made the walk numbers skyrocket. But they really didn't.
No.
Yeah. I mean, the offensive numbers kind of went up a little bit, but because nobody knew where anything was going, it just kind of was like a big nothing burger, except for the pitchers hated throwing it. So
wild pitches. And I think guys' numbers suffered because they were afraid to throw their like hard, their breaking stuff.
Yep. And I did also, you know, like the one thing that, I found interesting as well is that when they implemented the ABS system, that the walk numbers in AAA skyrocketed. So everybody was looking at their guy and saying, oh, look at this guy who's an elite OBP guy. But in reality, everybody's walk numbers had gone up. So let's see.
There's a question about Sosa in the chat. Like, what happens when he returns?
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know that they'll cut Josh Rojas because of what he's making.
Capra?
Yeah, I mean,
what's he even doing here?
I mean, can anybody other than Mydroth play short? Does it matter? You know, like, do you have to play Rojas there? Like, if Mydroth can't?
So, Brooks Baldwin, though.
Yeah, maybe there. You know what I'm saying? I think they want to trade Robert and play Baldwin in center field.
You know, I would say yes, I agree with that, except for the fact that I, like, it seems like every time I've looked at the box score in the last couple of days, Baldwin's been playing shortstop.
That's true. And they did. So Getz did say on Friday, like, you know, they love Brooks. He's aggressive, though, which he mentioned, like, that, you know, the aggressive approach. But he said that he's down there working on defense, like, because the role he's going to play is, you know, defense. And you have six outfielders on your team. Right? I mean, you still have Josh Palacio. So I think your natural platoon that you had the idea of that looks like it actually makes some sense right now, because Talkman's really pretty good and Slater is good against lefties. You know, Michael Taylor's kind of useless, but, you know, that plan, like, made sense. But then now you have, like, Josh Palacios on the team, too. You have six outfielders.
I mean, how many platoon guys can you possibly have on one roster? You know what I'm saying? It's like every guy that's not a piece for the future, we have to sit there and go, oh, well, he's good as this kind of a platoon.
Yeah, well, because you can, you know, instead of buying a $10 million player, you can get two guys for $5 million total that are okay against one side, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I get it, but I mean, like, ugh. It's just annoying to he can hit this side. You know?
So what do you think about this? Like, this is my weekly, like, talking about the Cubs. But so listening to sports radio, David Haw, there's others, right, who are insistent that Michael Bush should be playing every day, right? And Craig Counsell, like, that's where he gets Turner in there, or he gets somebody else. Like, they don't play Bush against lefties that often. But if you look at Michael Bush's numbers, he's awesome, right? But they seem to think that he wouldn't be as awesome against lefties, so they don't play him, right? Like, I don't know. Like, to me, he's the strong side of the platoon, so it's fine if he don't. Like, I don't think he has to play against lefties. But this is, like, a talking point, like, in town right now. That, you know, this is like, oh, if he was that good, he'd face lefties too. It's like, well, you know, I mean, you want to win that day's game.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, yeah. I mean, I guess not everybody's going to be a Freddie Freeman or a Shohei, you know, where they're just, like, killing the baseball. No,
right. I mean, I wouldn't play Benintendi against lefties that often. But that's mostly because I want to prop up his stats and trade him.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's see here. We got Palacios, Capra, Rojas, yeah. Bryce Wilson.
You mentioned Rojas twice. Go away.
Yeah. So much. Like him so much, we mentioned him twice. Yeah, I think that there's going to be some interesting decisions here. And, I mean, I am curious to see what they do with Vaughn. Not that he's going on a tear, but you know that every year he has 1 month a year.
Yep.
And it's usually June or July. So if he stays down and he just kind of does okay in June in Charlotte, but then in July he really heats up. Yeah. Like, do they do this again where they're, like, moving him around? And
I don't know. I feel like if they could trade him for cash, they would.
Yeah, that's fair.
But they can't because he makes too much money. Kevin asked about Baldwin. So yes, Brooks Baldwin is a natural infielder, but like we've kind of talked about on this show, I kind of think his big league role is a super utility role where he's going to have to be functional in the outfield. And he was just making some mistakes and he never walks and he has options and he was the easy guy to send down. But you know, I think he's going to be here. I think they like him. I think he's probably a bench guy, but a useful one.
Yeah, I like Brooks, and if you guys have been paying attention to the Future Sox account on X, Brooks Baldwin has been going absolutely bonkers. He's hitting like 370 with six home runs or something like that in 2 weeks, which is just absurd. Of course, we're seeing some trade packages here in the chat.
Yeah.
Vaughn trade package with Robert. Here, have our trash.
Take both of our terrible players.
Our overpaid guys that that don't hit. Please take these two guys.
I mean, at least Robert has some utility, right? Like, he can play center field and steals bases, and I think his bat speed is still like really good. He just isn't making any contact. Like, you know, he's all out of whack. I mean, he took 2 days off and he still like looks the same.
Yeah, I was thinking he was going to come back and at least look a little bit better. It's still the at bats still look the same. I don't know. And of course we have our weekly Uncle Ted, Spencer Jones for Vaughn, two Wash prospects.
Well, that trade I'd do.
Yeah, I mean, sure. You know, you get two guys that do two different things that end up with the same results of not very good.
Yeah, Ian is not, for those like listening for the first time, or, you know, like Ian is not a Spencer Jones guy, but he would trade Andrew Vaughn for him.
Yeah, I would. I would do that for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, like maybe, you know, Andrew Vaughn could help the Yankees in some shape or form. I don't know. Mm. I mean, you know, maybe they need somebody. I don't even know what I could say positively that he does, that they would need. Like, I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. Vince, right now, so Vince asked what they could get for Luis Robert. Oof. I mean, I think they're hoping to trade him at the very end of July and get, like, one piece that we all recognize. Then we're like, okay, like, that piece isn't bad, and then, like, two more things, but my fear is right now that it's like a couple of Jurel Perez level guys and you just save the money, which kind of sucks, but it just doesn't seem like, I don't know. I don't really like calling guys head cases, but he's kind of having some problems.
It's been a rough ride. That's for sure. Yeah. I mean, you get the Jurel Perez, Albertus trade for Robert, I'd be all for it at this point, because you're not going to pick up the option with the numbers that you're getting, and you're not getting the production that you expect either. And as Kevin mentions, he says he's on the side of our Chuck, that if Robert is in a different lineup where he's the third guy, he's mashing.
I don't know about third guy, fifth guy. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so if you threw him in the Dodgers or the Yankees lineup, I'm sure that he would probably be, you know, at least halfway decent, that it would be okay. You know?
Yeah, and you'd have to throw him fastballs. Like, he's going to hit a 3-run homer in the ALDS or something, you know, like as like one of your extra type guys. But I just, yeah, it's pretty tough right now. But I mean, I will say, so I tweeted something today that was a little bit controversial about Robert, and it was more just about the rules. So they have an option, a $20 million option and a $2 million buyout on Robert. I think they're going to trade him, so I think this is all moot. But in theory, like, they could decline the option and pay him $2 million, and then they could offer him the qualifying offer if they wanted to. Now, if they thought that he would accept the qualifying offer, like, I doubt they would do that, right? But if they knew that him and Boris were going to go to free agency and decline it anyway, then whatever deal he signs, like, you get a pick at the end of the second round for him. So, you know, there were a lot of people that on Twitter were like, well, why would a team give up a pick? I don't know that anybody would. I'm just saying, like, that's like an option for them. Like, if they know that they're going to pay the $2 million buyout and they know that he's not going to take the QO, then I don't think it's that terribly crazy that you would offer it to him. But yeah, I think that's unlikely, because I think they're probably going to trade him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. So let's see here. Question from baseball says, can Ishbia make free agent decisions and use his money this offseason? I don't know.
I mean, Bruce Levine kind of made it seem like he wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know, Ishbia, like, pumped money in and, like, the payroll went up because of it. But others kind of think he's just going to, like, pay down all the debt and build the stadium, which, fine. Like, I mean, guys, they're not like, and this is the other, another thing that I talked about on here, like Andrew Benintendi and Luis Robert, like those are their only contracts, right? Like, if they trade those guys, there's literally nothing on the books. And the way we're trending, you know, not that they're ready to win, right? But for next year, like, how many spots do they realistically need to fill? Because they're going to give their young guys runway. You have two catchers. You have a second baseman. Ideally, Montgomery is playing short. Vargas is playing third. You know, I don't anticipate him giving up on Tim Elko anytime soon. So, you know, you need a couple of outfielders and maybe some bullpen guys. Like they're gonna play their young guys to see what they have. But they're also not going to have a, you know, Ian scoffs every time I do this, but they're not going to have a $25 million payroll. They're just not. So, yeah.
I mean, you never know, you know? I mean, if you can win, at least, you know, they feel like they can go, like, closer to 500 with that, you know, with Jerry. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
Who's the Eric Fetty, Shane Smith next year? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, we will find out. That is for sure. I mean, it could be somebody like Evan McKendry who pitched for the Knights Day. It's not Evan McKendry,
but
it could be somebody like that. So just to highlight some of the performances this past week in the minors, Robert brings up Zavala and Wulco making adjustments. Zavala has been on a tear for the last couple of weeks, so we'll see. One thing that I did mention in a tweet earlier today in response to Zavala figuring things out, one thing I just wanted to point out, and I'm not saying that what he's doing, because it's been happening for 2 weeks, not just this week, is that the park that they were playing at is a park that left-handers just excel at, because they have a shallow wall that is super tall. Would I look at these stats from this week and go, oh, he's figured it out, you know, let's get ready to bump him? I would absolutely not say that, because I need to see that from him for at least another month before I even start thinking about that kind of thing. Yeah. Wilco's been having multi-hit games. He's starting to hit with more authority. He's going up the middle, which is A-OK by me. Colton Montgomery came back, got hit by a pitch. So now he's back out again after starting to look like he was figuring things out, which is...
OPS over 900, though, before he got hit in the hand again. So he was trending in the right direction. And then the other Montgomery, 4-for-6 today? Coming out of it, maybe?
Maybe. And I will say that the promising thing for me, because, you know, again, they're in Asheville, so there are no cameras, so we can't see any of these guys, anything except for, was posted. There was a home run posted, a Zavala home run posted. That's literally the only video I've seen from Asheville for the entire week. His hits quite a bit were to center field, which that to me suggests that he's staying closed a little bit more, because if he's hitting it to center field, that would be what he's doing, unless he's facing left-handed pitchers, which is possible, I suppose.
Well, and you would think that the BABIP was going to normalize at some point too. So it was just not going to be 460 or whatever it was.
Yeah. Well, there is that as well.
Jamie mentioned Albertus. Yes. So, yep. The international man of mystery, Alexander Albertus, finally played a game for a White Sox affiliate in the ACL. My guess is he stays there probably for a while, and then he's in Kannapolis in the second half.
Yep. Who was cold this week? Caleb Bonnemer. He had two hits this week, so that was a rough week. I mean, which. Yeah. Shouldn't really be. I mean, it's the law of averages. Guy's not going to hit 450. You know,
no.
He's just not going to hit 450. So, I mean, just right. He's bound to have a week here and there that are going to be a little bit lesser.
Javier Magallon seems pretty good, though.
He had a good week. He hit a home run today. Granted, you know, the average has kind of dipped a little bit because he's coming back from injury, and it's one of those things he's got to work back into. But, yeah, he did hit some nice line drives this week. He's looking pretty good. Pitching looked pretty good this week as a whole. I mean, Luis Reyes had the best outing of his career, his short career so far, which was awesome. And Carey brings up that Caleb looked uncharacteristically uncomfortable at the plate. I felt like the Pelicans did a really good job of pitching in his kitchen and making him have a really hard time hitting inside pitching. So we'll see if that's a continuing trend where these guys are just pitching in his in his kitchen all week, and we'll see what happens and see how he adjusts and sorts through that. So,
there's some lower level notes too before we get to you know, Winston and Sam Antonacci and some of that. So just a couple of things. The DSL started, obviously. I don't know much about these guys other than like a low dollar signing, $175K, I think it was, Frank Mieses. Ben Badler just happens to drop in his international review that like he might be the best position player that they signed. And he's been awesome for a week. So, you know, we'll see. This is kind of what happens, though, sometimes. Like, it happened with Jose Rodriguez, comes out of nowhere. It happened with Javier Mogollon, where there's just this signing that was like $100,000, and all of a sudden the guy is like a top 30 prospect in the system. So, like, the early name to watch down in the DSL is Frank Mieses. And then we've talked a little bit about the French pitcher Matthias Lacombe. He's up to number 20 on the Baseball America list, and all he's doing is starting like weekly in Arizona, but his stuff is pretty nasty, it sounds like. So as a, I think, 22-year-old, or he might even be 23, like he should be in Kannapolis soon.
Yeah, we've heard some of the metrics coming from some of his pitches, and it's pretty insane. So, I mean, I don't know when he's going to end up making his way to Kannapolis, but I would assume sometime in the second half of the season here.
And I'm sure there's strict innings limits on him too. Like, it's just, you know, the whole thing. But yeah, Kevin, he's a French-born pitcher that was a JUCO pitcher in Arizona 2 years ago. He was a 12th rounder. They paid him like a 6th rounder. So, you know, kind of a legit guy, but he wants to be the first, I think, French-born pitcher to pitch in the majors.
Yep. That would be cool. Yes, Robert, I agree. Galani is looking interesting. He's hitting the ball with authority. He's hitting line drives all over the place, which is awesome to see. Speaking of other guys in Birmingham that are hitting the ball and seemingly doing things, Jacob Gonzalez, since he changed over to the torpedo bat, if you guys do not follow Not Cease on Twitter, go ahead and follow him. He had a post about Gonzalez's number since he moved over to the torpedo bat, which is good stuff.
I think he's got a 117 WRC plus overall in Birmingham, which is okay. So,
yep. Let me see here. Yeah, Grant Umberger to the dash, carry ass. I mean, that would only make sense. Because, I mean, it looks like he's clearly overclassing these guys in A-ball. Even when he's not getting strikeouts, they're not getting hits.
It kind of reminds me of Tommy Vail a little bit last year.
Which, where it's just, in there's AA, he's been great as well.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing, you're always waiting for it, right? Like, I kind of talked about this with Lucas Gordon, where I didn't really think Lucas Gordon was a prospect. I just think some of these, like, advanced lefties will carve, like, the low minors, and then you run into your roadblock somewhere. But, you know, there's the chance that they just do it all the way through the high minors and get an opportunity.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I mean, we just have to keep on easing them up the ladder, you know. They keep on shoving, keep on moving them along, and we'll see where they start to falter. I don't know.
We didn't really get into Winston, but Sam Antonacci seems to have made a bit of a difference.
Yeah, he came back from his fractured finger, and immediately upon his first game back in the, you know, like I talked about it on here, saying that, you know, it seems to me that he's the guy that kind of, he doesn't necessarily get all the big hits, but he's always on base when somebody does. And it seems like there's more of that this week. And he's you know, he drove in a couple of guys today and pretty awesome.
How quickly would you do Birmingham for him? I mean, it's a college guy. I don't know. You'd almost need somebody to go up. Like I could see if Jacob Gonzalez went up to Charlotte or something, then, you know, maybe it's post draft.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that if you, I mean, like, he's always hitting the baseball. You know, he's always putting together professional at-bats. And the thing is, he's not, like, the most flashy guy. You know, it's not like, I'm trying to think of, like, a good comp for him, like, who I would say that he's kind of like. I guess Chase Mydroth would be like a yeah. decent comp for him. I don't know that he's necessarily got that kind of ceiling, but I mean, maybe he does. I don't know.
Well, he's not as athletic as Baldwin, yeah. and he doesn't have as much power, but it's one of those things where he's like doing exactly what like the scouting report said he was going to do. Like it's a limited ceiling, but like he's probably going to get to, you know, like a high percentage outcome because he just like gets on base all the time and like hits. So I don't even know that he's a regular, but I also don't know that he needs to like play minor league baseball that long. Like, because it's like it just doesn't, it's like not going to be that hard for him, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, he's always on base and like it just seems like his numbers will be pretty good no matter what.
Mydroth's a pretty good comp.
Yeah, I mean, like I guess I will agree. Like I'll reassess that comp after Double A, but I definitely want to see him in Double A when he gets to the higher velocity stuff and make sure that he can still hang with that. But if he does, it's just another one of those guys. Maybe it's just another one of those guys that's just, I don't know, for better lack of a way to compare him, is just say he's kind of like those mid-2000s Twins guys, you yeah. know, not anything flashy, but gonna annoy every single pitcher he faces, you know. So let me see here, anything else, any word on McClain? No, yeah. I have not heard anything about him.
He's not in the box score in Arizona either, so I don't think he's playing.
I texted you about that the other day.
I don't know what the injury is.
Yeah, I did find out that Michael Turner fractured one of his fingers in four places and broke the fingernail off, and he came out of a game a couple days ago, and so he's gonna be sitting for a few weeks, obviously.
Yeah, who's catching there? Hackenberg?
Cal Harris. Hackenberg's in Charlotte.
Yeah.
So
with Corey Lee. Yeah.
I think it's Cal Harris and. Colby Smelly, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Double A. So, Colby
Smelly. Nick Punto is not a bad comp for him.
Nick Punto. Ah, yes, the Piranhas. You got anything else this week that you are itching to get off your chest?
I don't believe so. I think, you know, over under on new additions to the team by next Sunday, go 1.5.
No. That's tough. Yeah, that sounds about right.
They just have new players every day. There's like one of these White Sox transaction tweets like every day, like about like something.
It's literally every day.
Oh, we
MLB
signed this,
trade
we,
rumors.
We signed this player for the minimum, and we put this guy on the 60-day DL to accommodate. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's like that one guy got picked up by the Phillies, and then we signed that other guy. Was it
Tyler
Alex?
Did you see Merck's? Did you see Merck's tweet about it today?
So
Merck.
No.
Said kudos to Tyler Alexander's Uber driver. He signed with the White Sox at noon today and took the 90-minute Uber from Milwaukee to the ballpark and pitched in the fourth inning.
Yeah, I saw him pitch. That's insane.
Yes. So he took an Uber from Milwaukee this morning after signing with the team and pitched on the same day.
Yeah, and I retweeted. I forget who it was that Chase Ford. The guy
he always breaks the promotions and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He tweeted something out earlier that they signed another guy as well. And I don't remember who it was, but I mean, it's just, they just keep picking guys up. And I mean, if they can make it work, and I mean, if they turn some of these guys into some sort of a return, I'm all for it. Keep on doing it. And if you can piece yourself together a decent bullpen without burning 40 man spots, I guess I'm good with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. You good with me walking us out? All right. You have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 PM on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. If you are looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on our X @FutureSox and now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content and want to support us here at Future Sox, there is a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat on our YouTube stream. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live while helping us with the World Wide Web algorithms. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at JamesFox917. We appreciate all of you. Thank you guys so much for coming and hanging out in the chat. You guys are killing it tonight. You guys drive this whole thing. We really appreciate it. Thanks for hanging out, and we will catch up with you guys next week.
Looking to get the most out of your money, time, and even better, your points and miles? I'm Chris Hutchins. I'm a lifelong optimizer, and I've sold 2 companies, racked up millions of points, and traveled the world to over 60 countries almost always for free. And I host All the Hacks, an award-winning podcast trusted by more than 1 million listeners that turns big ideas into quick tactical moves you can start using today to upgrade your life, money, and travel. Recent episodes have covered how to book business class seats for economy prices, how to make an easy $3,000 a month from online deals, and tiny habits that you can use to buy back hours of your time each week. There's no fluff in the show. It's just proven playbooks to travel better, spend smarter, and design a life you're excited about. So search All the Hacks. That's All the Hacks in your podcast app. Hit follow and start upgrading your life today.